Hello and welcome. We are the Designated Pundits. We're happy to have viewers here. I'm really excited to have Jose Tellez with us. Jose, welcome.
Thank you, Sky. I appreciate it, man. I'm excited to be here, an avid viewer of the Designated Pundits, and now getting a celebrity shot at a co-hosting for this week. I'm pumped, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a big tryout for you. Of course, you have bigger things to do than this, but... Our keen-eyed viewers may be noticing that Bob is not here. Bob's out of town right now, unable to join. So I'm kind of guest running the show today. Anyways, it's my first time. There's some of this stuff. I don't really know how it works. So apologies that we're going to be a little low on the showy aspects of this. But we're just going to get started. We're going to jump into it. As always, we're going to talk about things we got right, things we got wrong from our preview pod last week. So first off, things we were right. A big win for us. We picked FC Cincinnati over NYCFC. As we like to say on this show, say it with me, NYCFC are a bad soccer team.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I think they're... I don't know, man. I don't know how to feel about this NYCFC team. Is it fair to say that they can't win outside of that baseball stadium?
Yeah, it feels like they are two different teams. Inside that baseball stadium, they are a reasonably competent professional soccer team. Outside of that baseball stadium, I don't know what they are, but it's not an MLS caliber soccer team.
Oh, man. I want to have faith in this team so bad for a number of different reasons. And, mm-hmm. and I felt like the match against the Timbers a couple weeks ago when they let it slip in the final 10 minutes maybe epitomizes this team all the way around, frankly speaking. Yeah. You know, not being able to you know, show up in moments throughout the match when it matters most. It was like a series of those things against Cincinnati. And honestly, I feel like at this point, credit to yourself, Bob, Alex, Designated Pundits for picking Cincy. At this point, though, I'm willing to bet that more often than not, the 2024 season picking against New York City FC is probably the win.
Oh, yeah. And that's how we feel, too. I don't want to beat up on NYCFC too much because I think it's an exciting kind of group with lots of young players, and I like that. So I don't want to hate on them. That's really unfair. Does it mean anything to you that Cincy only scored one goal in this game?
I feel like they're getting... Well, to answer your question, it means something. I just don't know what yet. I think it's difficult to gauge Cincy's attack for a number of reasons, right? Bupenza not getting to a regular start with Cincy. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some of this, you know, jet lag in the life without Brandon Vasquez. I don't know if that's going to be a thing for long. I'm really kind of hoping it's not because Cincy they have a good team despite missing or losing, I should say, some key pieces. I think it'll get better. I feel like they're going to progress. It may be slower than Cincy fans are hoping for, but I don't feel like this Eastern Conference finalist is going to completely drop off in quality out of nowhere. And if they're starting a little bit slower, I still have enough faith in what they've produced under Noonan to get back to where we all feel they should be.
I agree with you. And I think maybe they are learning a lesson from last season where they – you know, expended so much energy winning games throughout the regular season. And you get to the playoffs at the end of the season, you're a little bit gassed. You're a little emotionally drained. You're physically drained. And now this is a team that is learning how to win 1-0. It's learning how to remain competitive, but maybe save themselves a little bit. So maybe this is a team that, even though for most of the season they don't look quite as good as they looked last year, maybe they are setting themselves up to be more competitive in a postseason environment.
Yeah, and what's crazy about that, you know, you think about that type of progression, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think, well, one, the crazy point is that Cincinnati are still top of the East, right? They're not even mm-hmm. playing to the form that we feel they are capable of, and they're still finding a way to net out points. It may not be with style points added to it, right? It may not be mm-hmm. in traditional fashion, but they're still finding a way to do it, which lets you know the caliber of this team on any given day. When they start to put it together, it's like they're in a real rhythm on the pitch. I think it's going to be scary, not just for teams in the East, but the East is just looking that much stronger than the West week over week.
Oh, the East is very scary. There are so many teams that I think on any given day can just beat just about anybody.
Agreed.
Speaking of teams that on any given day, we should talk about Portland and Philly. This is a pick that we got wrong. We picked Portland. We like the look of Portland's offense. We like the direction that this Portland team has started the season. Yes, the win in Colorado was a fluke, but even if you look at just the stuff after that, this Portland team looks good. And yeah. and we found out that Jonathan Rodriguez was going to be available for this game. So we were like, yeah, go yeah. for it.
Absolutely. I mean, you got a brand new signing, a brand new player, get to implement him immediately. I mean, you, yeah. what fan isn't excited about that? And I'll be honest, for the first, like, I don't even know if I look at like the field tilt and how that kind of panned out. For the first, let's say 25 minutes, Portland was in sole control of the game. It was honestly scary if you were a Union fan. I couldn't believe how many chances were saved. I think Portland could have been up 2-0 easily before Philly ever got on the score sheet. This could have been a 3-3, right? It was one of those games where neutral fans were really kind of hoping it was. I picked Portland on our pick show on Wake Up MLS, and for the exact reasons that you stated, like they look like a much scarier team in 2024 than in 2023, at least to kick off the season. But this is another team that, you know, we kind of talked about not only what to expect with Cincy a little bit and how slow they're starting. This is a team that's probably a little more volatile. Like they show yeah. up in a big way one week, and the next week they show up, but they're not just not finishing off the chances like a true, you know, top four conference team would. I don't know. I still think we're maybe a little bit early on Portland, but man, a lot of missed chances against a down bad Philly team. This is a Union team that if there was ever a chance to go at Jim Curtin's men, this is the version of them that you.
Yeah. And the thing about this version of Philly is this version of Philly is still kind of scary because in MLS play, they have been incredibly resilient. They are grinding out, you know, late goals to earn draws. Like they're just not throwing away, you know, points in terms of losses. Maybe they're not getting wins they should get, but they are a hard team to beat, which is something. But looking at this game overall, Portland Timbers, 72% possession, 18 total shots, 6 shots on target, 4 big chances, 3 of them big chances missed. The offense was so dynamic. They created so many good opportunities. They were in the right places. Cabecita immediately looks like he's got chemistry with his teammates, and they just none of it translated. Their expected goals was 1.79, which is respectable, but not nearly enough for the kind of opportunities they were generating. And you look at their shot chart, it's all right in the middle.
Yeah.
They're not taking bad shots.
No, it's kind of crazy. I mean, so the number that sticks out to me is not even just the number of opportunities. It's frankly just how much they controlled the game. You know, the narrative was all for the Timbers. And when you have a team that's over 70% possession, that's not an inflated, hey, they were just kind of playing the ball through the middle of the pitch laterally, not really ever making progressive passes to break the lines. This is simply a team that just, you can argue in some ways was unlucky, but in other ways, maybe they're still showing that they're kind of bouncing back from a weird and pretty down 2023. They look better to kick off the year under, you know, Neville, who I frankly just don't rate as a manager. I haven't. He hasn't shown me enough yet. And I think his team right now in Portland is reflective of that a little bit. But if you're a Timbers fan, I wouldn't get too down about this. I wouldn't. Like you can clearly tell that it's working. Like they're actually significantly more in control of matches just to kick off the new year. And with offensive output like this, when the goals start falling, Portland are going to be a crazy team to go up against.
I think the only thing about Portland that like you really makes you doubt is their defense. They just cannot stop conceding goals. No clean sheets this season.
I think the most exciting team in the West for that reason, though. I mean,
from
perspective.
them and the Galaxy are really like must-watch TV. But I agree 100%. With you wholeheartedly about Phil Neville. I think that this Portland team is what it is based off of the strength of the roster, not necessarily because of anything. It's correct. A little bit of freshness. You get that like new manager bump. He comes in and whatever. I think there's going to be a day where he's going to have to be the manager and manage the team through some crisis or just be tactically astute enough to get them over, you know, over a hump. And I don't have a lot of faith that he's going to do it.
Yeah, same here. But I think, you know, I want to see him really try and prove himself with the Timbers, right? I think with Miami, he wasn't even close to being ready for that job. I think he was kind of gifted to him, and we all know the connection between him and the owner. But I think, you know, fine, whatever. It was a crapshoot. You move on to a new gig in a market that is much more suitable for a manager like that, right? Miami, I think, completely different. He was never ready for it. So you know, if this is what we can expect more of, at least moving forward with what they have, I like this. This is making this team, from a neutral fan's perspective, like you said, must-watch TV. And it can only hopefully from his perspective get better for me. But yeah, you're right. If they don't, they might concede some of the most goals in MLS this season. They'll tighten up defense.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch. Sure. Let's stay in the West. We picked Vancouver Whitecaps to beat Real Salt Lake, and that did not play out. This was a surprising game to me, but I'm an RSL fan, so I'm emotionally compromised. You're a neutral.
Yep.
Did this game surprise you at all?
A little bit. I also got this pick wrong. I picked Vancouver, and maybe this was some bias and agenda because of the fact that I'm an FC Dallas fan, and we were just coming off of that loss. But if I really go back and even pick apart that game a little bit at a high level, I think it explains the Vancouver Whitecaps in a nutshell. They're one of the most efficient teams in all of MLS. They don't need too many opportunities to score. They need some. And against Dallas, it was a 20-minute spell that won them that game. All three goals coming in a 20-minute window, and outside of that, Dallas controlled it. So, you know, with this game, it was a difficult pick for me simply because what favored them, from my opinion, was their home field advantage. It's always difficult to travel to Canada and get kind of result. However, RSL so – and you know this, right? I feel like we get a different version of RSL to an extent, match over match. You know, sometimes they're rampant and so difficult to keep up with, specifically when Luna gets the ball and gets more of it. However, when that doesn't happen, and there are games where he is somewhat stagnant, it's you just don't know really what to expect from them. And that's kind of how I felt about RSL going into this match. But it's one of those games where they turned it on, and I felt like Vancouver, while they are the most efficient team, and I feel like, in my opinion, and they're a good playoff team, I'm not knocking them whatsoever. It's just when they get their moments, they don't aim to control it. They aim to just hit you on the break, and RSL found a way to kind of overcome that. Even despite, I think it was it Vancouver that scored first?
Vancouver scored first.
Yeah.
First, Demir Krylock.
Of all players.
Yep. It was like, that was the one thing that we got right about this, is we called out Demir for an anytime goal scorer.
Yeah, he really is, though. He really is that guy. And so, yeah, I mean, just to kind of put a bow on it, I think that it surprised me, but I think that it's just not as much as others, because I still feel like Vancouver's a very slept-on team, even despite their recent.
I really like this version of Vancouver. I think that they are very, very quickly figuring out how to be what they want to be. And so all of the things that you just said, their efficiency, the way that they take their opportunities, I think all of that, I still think this is a team that's more on the up than they are like plateauing. But yeah, I was a little surprised. I just want to call out one player, dual national, Fidel Barajas.
Insane talent,
17 years old. Most recently, he's been with the Mexican like U17 group or youth setup. Diego Luna came through last season, you know, had his breakout season. Diego Luna did not start as confidently as Fidel Barajas is starting. He is so up to speed immediately. This kid's ceiling is incredibly high.
It is. And I feel like RSL can build around Barajas and Luna together in a very, very big way. I think I remember seeing Fidel a little bit in the USL and thinking there's something here. Obviously, with a kid, you never really know, because he very much is a kid. I mean, I heard of him when he was 16, just over a year ago. And it didn't really – I didn't know how much stock to put into it. But I think now you watch him in MLS, and there is a pretty decent-sized gap for the most part between the two. It just he translates so well right over, fits right in. The fast start is surprising me. I'd be shocked. I mean, I know you need to protect players like that are that young, not give them as many minutes as possible right away. But I'd be shocked if RSL doesn't find a way to consistently fit him in and get him regular minutes, simply because you're a different team moving forward when he's on the pitch. So
yeah,
I think it has to happen, and that's either a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you look at protecting.
I think he's going to be one of those players that he's going to have his starting opportunities, and he's going to be one of those first guys off the bench quite often. Let's keep this moving. Let's talk about St. Louis and DC United. We kind of thought St. Louis would have a chance here. We thought the press might fluster DC a little bit, especially after their very sloppy performance against Miami.
Yep.
That didn't quite play out. They played actually a fairly entertaining 2-2 draw. I guess, do you have any like takeaways for either team from this? Or do you feel like this was just classic MLS? Two teams went out there and they just played some soccer and Tutu came out.
You know what? I think for we're talking about St. Louis. I'll get to DC United in a second, but I think with St. Louis, what's sticking out to me is I'm not going to sit here and call it. I did call it at the beginning of the season prior to any matches being played that they would experience somewhat of a sophomore slump. I think there's no way you could reproduce the performances they had last year. But I still felt like City Park would be enough, maybe even too much for DC United to handle, just considering what we know about them historically, especially in recent seasons. But coming out this season to start with, you know, under Coach Troy, it's a different version. And I'll be honest, like they completely debunked my theory, at least for this match alone, that, you know, home field is that much of an advantage. I think City Park's one of the hardest places to go play. And they found a way to, for the most part, get it done. I mean, they were no shortage of opportunities. They had double digit opportunities in terms of shots, and possession was, you know, almost neck and neck. They were leading at 1.21, took a PK to save St. Louis. So I don't know, with St. Louis, it's really hard to predict what they're going to be this season. You know, are they going to be a wild card team? Are they going to be somewhere in the middle of the Western Conference table? I really don't know. Because if you look at their recent history, it's so much back and forth, high scoring games, but they're still coming out to a draw. They're netting out 1 point after 1 point after 1 point when we saw this team completely run over the West last season. So that sticks out to me. But from DC United's perspective, I think everything's positive. I think you look at where they were last season and they feel like a different team. Chances galore for the most part. This wasn't even that high of a chance opportunity for them. 10 is solid. But yeah, I mean, no complaints. Like, I think that they'll be fairly happy with how they played, considering how they finished out the Miami game.
I 100% agree. I don't think DC should have any complaints about it. I think it's a good road point for them. I think a lot of other teams are going to go into City Park and lose. I think for St. Louis, I think they may have some complaints. I think they really relied on set pieces to get goals. Berkey, after the game, I think had some comments to that effect. He said something like, if you can't score an open play, you're not going to win a lot of games. I think that they have not settled in to their attacking structure or shape or tactics or whatever it is with that relationship between Klaus and Adeniran. I don't think that is settled. I'm not saying that it can't work or anything like that, but it's not there yet.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and this is maybe one of those ones where we kind of almost rehash what we talked about with Cincinnati, you know, just to put a bow on it. I think, you know, maybe they're just starting out a little bit slower. They do have a key injury, right, to is it Lowen?
Lewin.
Lewin. Their number 10 is necessary, I think, for how they want to play. But I still think they're a good enough team where they should be able to get pragmatic if they need to and find a way, like Berkey said, to score out of open play. They have the talent on the pitch. So, you know, more of these draws, you know, we said it with Philadelphia, there is a skill to be said and had with being able to at least get something from matches. But at home, you want to be able to net out more than a point, especially if you have a team as good as St. Louis. So maybe it's a learning experience. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, another draw.
Yeah. All right. So last of our pick recaps, New England and Chicago. We thought New England would get some points here. They did get a point, but not the points we were expecting. I found this game to be reasonably entertaining. But the thing for me that was like really apparent was that both teams had really good opportunities and they were let down by a lack of like quality in the final third. Did you have a similar takeaway?
Yes, to an extent. I will say from a Chicago Fire's perspective, less so maybe than the New England Revolution. I think with Fire, I think you have to just try and see positives in the road point, even despite how bad New England is. But also Kuiper's getting on the score sheet, you know, waiting for that, right? And, you know, hopefully him being able to build on that. You know, that's a high-pressure signing that they made, you know? Now don't really have an excuse if you can't get the goals, right? Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you need to get him going. It relieves so much pressure on the rest of the team. And, you know, Fire fans will carry a lot of solace in that. They did miss opportunities, don't get me wrong, but I still feel like there's some positive and light at the end of the tunnel. Whereas, like, New England, if Carl's heel is your entire offense moving forward the rest of the season, this team is in such deep trouble. I don't even know really where to start. I think a striker that's not Vrioni has to be on the radar at some point. Like, there really has to be just a demanding of higher quality, like you said, up the pitch so that they can play meaningful matches. Because before you know it, these matches may not mean that much. They keep going the route that they're going now. I mean, the countdown is still on for when New England gets their first win of the season.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that was actually only their first point of the season. I think they are dead last in the Wooden Spoon race. So not good for them. Let's move on. Bob's going to rue that he's not here for this one. Let's talk about some big wins, a couple of big games.
Yeah.
So first off, the New York Red Bulls, they got wings. They got wings against Inter Miami. Big 4-0 win, 3 goals from Lewis Morgan. Dante Van Zier with 4 assists. That connection looks hot. This was a big win. Obviously a Messi-less Inter Miami. What are your takeaways on this game? Do you have like serious takeaways, or you're like,
No. I think that there's a couple one on each side. I think with the Red Bulls, look, when was the last time we saw a Red Bulls striker in the race for the Golden Boot? I can't really remember. Maybe BWP. That might have been like the last, you know, profile player that was in that race. And Morgan's there now officially, right, with this hat trick that he scored. I think it was his coming out party. But for the most part, I mean, something about Red Bull Arena, maybe. I'm not really sure. The monsoon in New York this past weekend didn't really help either. Sure, but I think that there's a lot of positives that Red Bull fans take from this. I remember I could totally see Bob saying, "We're back," right? Kind of just screaming that from the mountaintop, wherever he may be watching the show at this moment. So a lot of positives, right? A 4-0 performance from the Red Bulls. A lot of good. But from Inter Miami's standpoint, Messi-less Miami cannot be an excuse with this team. It just can't. It just there's so much quality in the four players that they've now brought to Miami that, despite their age, they should still be able to impact games more than this. And maybe, like I said, maybe a number of the elements impacted them this past weekend. Not really sure, but I'm not going to buy into this no Messi, no party take just yet. I still think this team can get it done when they need to without him, hopefully.
I totally agree with that. Miami were missing some other players, you know, through the international window and injury and all of that. I think that has a combined effect that is maybe greater than just missing any one single player. But Suarez, Busquets, and Alba all played significant minutes. There is still enough quality in that group to do better. I think this is very much going to be the story for Miami. They're just going to have these days that they just kind of crash out. Not something to worry about if you're a Miami fan. They're still going to be fine in knockout tournaments when they really want to turn it on. Let's go to another big game. LAFC had their coming out party of the year against Nashville, a big 5-0 win. Denny Bouanga finally getting on the score sheet, had 2 goals and an assist. Big game. Is LAFC, are they arrived? Are they off and running now?
God, I hope so. Finally, I think this is LAFC looking like LAFC. It's time. It's I was asking myself before this game started, what happens if they somehow do not get not just any point, but a result, a 3, or, you know, 2-0, maybe even a 3-0, just something that's meaningful, because a team that good that has that much talent on the pitch doesn't really have an excuse, right? So, you know, the poor start by their standards that they've had this season so far, I think they exercised some demons with this 5-0. I will say the one thing that stood out to me, I don't know about you, but it was the XG of this game. Like, I can't think of ever seeing, what was it, above 3?
4.88. 4.88 for LAFC. They were going for 10 to, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, and Nashville, I mean, what can we say about Nashville? Realistically, like, is there any defense of this team? I think last season they were the best defense in MLS, statistically speaking. They lacked forward options outside of Mukhtar. Mm-hmm. Now they've added a couple pieces there, and they're leaking more goals. I know Zimmerman's not playing, or is coming back up to speed, whatever.
It's not a good enough excuse for me. Not a really good excuse for me on why this team's defense should have dropped off so badly. I know that Joe Willis got a 62nd minute red card. That's fine. They were shipping goals before that. You know, they looked like they were going to ship goals before that. They were getting run over all over the field. I think that structurally this team is in a bad place.
Yeah, I agree. And anybody wants to use that as an excuse, I mean, you were already down 3-0 when that happened. So I think at the end of the day, like, this has to be hopefully somewhat of a reset moment for them, because if they don't, I mean, this is not a terrible team on paper. It's not. Pretty decent team on paper. So they should be, you know, significantly better. I don't know what has to happen.
Yeah, they should still be on paper, they should still be a playoff team in the East, a very competitive East, but they should still be in that playoff conversation.
Agreed.
The way they are playing, they will not be. So they're going to have to figure that out. Another one, this was must-watch TV. Absolutely. The LA Galaxy comeback win over Sporting Kansas City. Wild.
Insane.
It was really like a tale of two games. Like the first half, Kansas City was absolutely dominant. 2-0 lead. They were just running over LA. And then second half, Ricky Pooch pushes a little forward. They make a few tweaks, little changes. Suddenly they are running this game, and they had just like an 8-minute explosion where they scored 3 goals.
It was insane. It was insane. And I would say even for the first like 10 minutes of the second half, it wasn't like either team dominated. The first 10 to 15 minutes of the second half, it was kind of just a little bit back and forth, a transitional period, if you will, after Casey completely dominated the first half. And like you said, it's like Ricky Pooch decided out of nowhere, hey, I'm going to start playing now. Yeah. Let's start having fun. Let's start having a good time. And he just turns on these through balls into Jovalich that I was like, where was this the entire first half, right? Where was this rampant LA Galaxy, the team that we've been seeing for the whole first month plus of the season? And it makes this team, in my opinion, like this type of win, very scary. Very scary. Oh, yeah. At Children's Mercy Park, right? It's difficult to go to the Midwest and get a result, which is that avid fan base. And then outside of that, right, in that small window to just decide that we're not going to lose this game, and they have the quality on the pitch to convert the chances. Because what if Pooch had been playing this to, I don't know, a poor form version of Chicharito or someone else that maybe would have missed the opportunities or whatever the case may be. They never get to understand what it's like to, you know, grind out a result truly on the road and build off of that. So this version of LA Galaxy, the superstar-less in a way, LA Galaxy, it's a scary team.
I think the really interesting thing that you said there, though, is about that like poor form Chicharito and stuff, because it's funny, Dejan Jovalić, five goals in five games. He's the first player since like 1998 to do that. And if he scores in the next game, you know, 6-6, he'll be the first player ever to do that. It's funny because he has been wasteful in front of goal. He probably should be on like 8 or 9 goals.
I asked on Twitter if
Benteke were presented with the same chances that he's been presented, Benteke would probably have.
Like, true. Very true.
Right?
Very true.
It's a funny thing to me. And I'm not here to like slander him. LA Galaxy fans, don't come for me. I'm just saying it's something about the relentless nature of this Galaxy team. That's what I think is so scary, is it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that Jovalić is going to waste a whole bunch of really good opportunities. Another one is coming.
Very true.
And it will come until he gets his goal.
You know, it's kind of crazy. He's still kind of young, right? I think mid-20s, like 24, maybe 25. And, you know, I say kind of young because maybe that's, I don't know, maybe it's somewhat of an excuse that I'm trying to make for him in terms of the chances he brews, right? In terms of missed opportunities. But, I mean, yeah, they create so many that it's weird how you just feel like, I remember watching when they scored first, right? I was thinking, the comeback isn't just on. They're probably going to win this game. Like the 5 minutes leading up to that was all LA Galaxy. I feel like the minute they found a way to split the center backs, that was going to be Ricky's opportunities left and right for the remainder of the game. And when they tied it, I was like, oh, it's definitely over. And it's crazy to think that about this now. So considering where they were in 2023. So I don't know. I don't think anybody home or away right now wants
to. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. All right. Two quick ones that I think were surprising to a couple of people. San Jose, they beat the Sounders 3-2. Crazy finish to this one. Musovski scores an equalizer in like the 81st minute. And 50 seconds later, I went back and watched the tape to see exactly. It was 50 seconds. Evo Bisse, just right off the kickoff, down the other end, scores the go-ahead goal. That was nuts. The Sounders, I don't know who's playing in their uniforms, but it's not them. Rui Diaz, though, I guess he's still there. He scored a penalty, and now he's the Sounders' all-time leading scorer. So congratulations for that. I don't think he'll care very much.
No, I don't think so either. I think, I keep laughing at this because it's like, if there was a team you were hoping to catch at this time of the year right now, it's probably the Earthquakes. It's probably the Quakes. I think they're, you know, they're Espinoza FC, no disrespect to Ebobese. I think, you know, that's who everything tends to run through. And I haven't
They're not an intimidating team.
No,
you feel like that, you feel like they're an opportunity to get points.
Yeah, but with that said, the same problem that has plagued the Sounders since last year, and it blew my mind coming in this year that everybody had Sounders going back to the Western Conference Final or even potentially to MLS Cup. I didn't see what everybody else saw. This team has struggled to score when Ruy Diaz is not playing, which coincidentally, he probably goes through anywhere from 3 to 5 injuries a year. So it's one of those things where I didn't see where the goals are going to come from, and you see it now. I mean, I think they probably have one of the lowest goals for in MLS at the moment. Two of maybe the four goals they've scored altogether are penalty kicks, maybe even more than that, actually. It's just one of those things where I don't know, even if Joao Paulo comes back, even if other, you know, injured players come back, I don't know what this team's identity is. It's a little bit scary if you're a Sounders fan.
It is. It absolutely is. And it's one of those things that I think for everybody else in the league, you're just looking at it and wondering, when are they going to turn it around? In classic Sounder fashion, when are they going to start playing? Jordan Morris is going to score like 5 and, you know, they'll be off and running. Okay. Last one from the week that I kind of noted, Charlotte gets the upset against Columbus. This game was a little wild.
It was very wild.
It's a bad day in the office for Columbus. Camacho forced off with an injury after 18 minutes. Ramirez forced off after 23 minutes with an injury. Then Derek Jones, who, by the way, has subbed on for Camacho, so he's only come into the game in like the 18th minute. He gets a straight red card for a awkward tackle. I'm going to call it awkward. I'm not going to call it bad or anything. It's just awkward. But that's only like in the 28th minute. So Columbus is playing two injuries, man down, after just 28 minutes of game time. I guess I'm just making excuses. Does that just feel like the story of this game, though? Like, congratulations to Charlotte, but there's some extenuating circumstances.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you're a Columbus Crew fan, you are not worried about this game one bit. I think at the end of the day, it's a one-off. It's something that a dynamic team as they are, no fan need to worry about Wilfred Nancy's men here. I think, like you said, the red card played a lot into it. The injuries did also significantly impact the game from their perspective. I still think even before the red card, though, they, you know, it's not like Charlotte was controlling the match. It wasn't until they had the man advantage. Mm-hmm. And credit to Dean Smith's men. You know, you stole a result. I say stole because we all know who the better team is. But you found a way to create some confidence for your men, defeating the defending champion on your home ground. And I think that it's going to maybe solidify that fortress a little bit at the bank, right? Making that a true difficult road test for any opponent.
I think that like 10 straight games without a loss there, or 10 straight wins.
Yeah.
Something like that. They have been good there.
And I wonder what their attendance probably is at this point as well. I think after a match like this, you have to feel like every match moving forward is going to be massive for that fan base. They're going to believe in a way that they didn't believe the last couple seasons. And I don't know. Like I said, I'm not reading too much into this as a fan or someone who's predicting how these matches will go every week. I'm still mentally have Charlotte where I feel they need to be, but a massive result. And if you're the Crew, look, move past it. Short memory, on to the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. If you didn't catch this one, go back, watch Westwood's goal. It's a banger. Worth your time. All right. This is the last thing. We're just about up to time, but I think we would be doing a bad job if we did not talk about the U.S. men's national team repeating as Nations League champion. Bad day for Mexico. You know, this was a pretty good game. It was a good rivalry game. It was feisty. There were emotions, you know, from a soccer perspective. We'll get to the other stuff, but from a soccer perspective, do you have any thoughts?
I think the one concern I had going into this game, outside of how we played against Jamaica, which was very poor, mm-hmm. to say the least, I think was the decisions made by Greg with personnel going into this game. I did not agree with the Tyler Adams start, and I'll say that with my chest, despite
the goal. I didn't either.
I think limited minutes, it's not even just that you risk, you know, injury with him. It's also that you give the opponent a perfect read on what has to happen. You assume he has to come off early at some point. You give maybe the team a target to an extent on the pitch. I think there was just more negatives than pros, but it works out for Greg again. And I think that, look, no one predicts that banger that he hit. I don't think Tyler could ever predict he was going to do that. I'm not going to say he couldn't ever do it again, because he definitely could. But that goal was... honestly, it felt like the U.S. won from that point on. That once that goal went in, the game felt like it was going to go to the way of the U.S. men's national team. And I want us to be proud of this trophy that we've won again. However, it's important to get a trophy going to Copa America. However, this is the worst version of Mexico we've seen well over half, almost a decade.
They're terrible.
Yeah, it's insane how bad this team is. And so I want the U.S. men's national team fan base, for those who are in the audience, to just realize that, not that we're lucky by any means, but that we shouldn't read too much into this, right? There are bigger teams on the horizon in this Copa America, one very specifically in our group in Uruguay, that we cannot overlook or go into, you know, overconfident because of a big rival win that, frankly, we're undefeated against in the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 meetings. So yeah, great result, but we have to kind of have a short memory with this one and move on.
Yeah, I think it's worthwhile saying you can only beat the team in front of you. Greg deserves the credit for his team winning that game. The other thing I think he deserves credit for is it's very obvious to me that the team trusts him, that his relationship with that team is good. Tyler Adams scores that goal, runs right over to the bench, right?
Yep.
Gio Reyna starts that game, plays most of that game. He has comments, you know, to the media later on, or before or after the game, doesn't matter, where he says, like, look, we're fine. Everything's fine. Claudio Reyna has a box at the, you know, at the
stadium. I saw that. Yeah.
Like, I'm just saying, like, they're professionals and adults who have clearly gotten to a point where they're at least working well together. And that's whatever history they have is not affecting them. As fans too, let's move on and just like judge this team by whatever they can. They're going to make some mistakes. That's fine. But like they're doing the job, and that's okay for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like I said, I think it's a great trophy to win. It's important to go into a big, big tournament with momentum of some kind, any way, shape, or form. And I think at the same time, right, it probably did show Greg at least a little bit who he can somewhat experiment with, like we saw with Haji, right? Maybe even rely upon when it comes to guys like we said, Tyler Adams. So there's some reinforcement on both sides of that coin for Berhalter and decisions he has to make going into that tournament.
Absolutely. And I did like some of the depth pieces that showed. I really liked what Johnny did on the field, and I don't know, neither here nor there.
Let me ask before we move on one last thing. I'm curious because I feel like I try to talk about this on the timeline, and I think a lot of fans took it the wrong way. How do you feel across these two performances, even in the final, about Balogun?
I feel like the striker position is up for grabs. That's how I feel about it. None of the options, and all of them, I'm fans of all of them. I like them. I think they have talent, and they bring good qualities. The striker position is 100% up for grabs. Nobody has seized it. Nobody has said, it's got to be mine. The style of play has to be around me or whatever. I'm going to be the guy. It's just not there. And, you know, it can be Balogun. It can be Haji Wright. It can be, I don't care. It can be anybody. It can be Pepe. Like, it doesn't matter. None of those guys have been consistent enough or dangerous enough to say, put your trust in me. I'm the dude.
I agree. I think to go a step further, I would say this past weekend or this past week, these two matches against Jamaica and Mexico, that door has been pushed wide open by Balogun's performance, in my opinion. I think he's a great striker. I think there's a reason that at one point in his career, he was at Arsenal, why he plays in Europe for Monaco now. I think there's something there, 100%. He's still young. But I think that there were moments for sure where you have, if you're Greg, you have to think, okay, I've definitely given him more than a fair opportunity to start game in and game out for us and try and produce. And he has in some moments, but it's just not yet consistent enough. And maybe this will be motivation for others coming off the bench, Haji Wright, Josh Sargent, anybody else to come in and say, you know what, Pepe, right? Anybody come in and like this spot is up for grabs and there's an opportunity for me to earn it. Even if it's in the form of minutes, as opposed to being the actual starter on the pitch prior to Copa America. So there's a lot that I think Greg has to think about, but I think the players will help him solve.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there is enough attacking talent around that striker position that somebody eventually will step forward and take that chance, and they will be getting the help that they need. I agree. It's going to be on the field for them. All right, we're at 42 minutes. I think it's time for us to call it. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Jose, thank you so much for joining. Tell us where we can find your work.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. And the only plug I'll leave is to go to Goals TV and check it out. GOLZ.TV. You'll find the Designated Pundit show on Goals TV as well, along with a ton of other pods and content creators who are all trying to do what we're doing, which is grow the game on this side of the planet. So that's my only plug. Other than that, again, thanks so much for having me. I am down to do this whenever you guys need me.
Hey, thank you so much. We would love to have you anytime you want to be on here. Open invitation.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much to you. Thank you so much to all of our viewers. We really appreciate you. Have a good night.
Thanks, guys.